Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Reed Farrell Coleman, who is out with his latest book. It's Robert B. Parker's The Bitterest Pill. It's the latest Jesse Stone novel. It's available now wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Putnam. Reed, this is, what, your sixth now of the Jesse Stone series?
Yes, it's the sixth.
Is it strange to you that Robert B. Parker has been deceased a while? You're now six books into this. There's probably people that never read a Robert B. Parker that he actually wrote, and they only know you as the author.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But I have to say that Parker's fans are amazingly loyal, so that I'm sure some of my fans came to the series because of me, and that some people have independently read the book, you know, either my books or Ace Atkins, Parker's books. But I think largely the audience is so loyal that most of the readers are old Bob Parker fans.
Well, Jesse Stone, he's the chief of police there in Paradise, Massachusetts. Give me an idea of where Paradise is, because this is important for the book. How far from Boston, both culturally and geographically removed?
It's about as far away from Boston as Marblehead is, which is about 15 miles, I believe. But don't hold me to that, since I'm New York born and raised.
So, but as far as culturally removed, how does it differ from Boston?
Well, I think one of the interesting things about the series is, as in my hands, is I've kind of chronicled the encroachment of Boston on Paradise, so that 15 miles away at one time was, you know, far enough away, and these days that's not very far. It's becoming kind of a exurb or suburb of Boston. So it was once a sleepy resort seaside town that is now undergoing a transformation.
This book delves into the opioid crisis. That's something I think people in every locality in the United States now can identify with, and perhaps even worldwide. But set it up for us, what's going on in the book with this cheerleader death and what Jesse Stone's trying to accomplish.
Yes. Well, you know, one of the things that this series does is Jesse is not a preacher, so it's not Jesse railing against either white supremacy or the opioid crisis. It's Jesse Stone as a small-town chief of police having to deal with things that come into town. And in this book, Jesse is dealing with the death of a 17-year-old cheerleader who's the daughter of a town selectman or councilman. And it is Jesse peeling back the onions, the layers of onion skin, to find out how the drugs have work their way into town, and he tries to follow the trail back to where the origins of the problem are.
Jesse found out that he has an adult son, and I was wondering as I read this how much this whole mission of his in this book, how much it felt personal to him because he's a father and you've got a young daughter who's dead.
Yeah, I think obviously you've read the book, and the thing for me is Jesse Stone has always been this kind of self-contained, stoic character who deals with all manner of crime but can be somewhat removed from it because he's neither now married nor did he have children. And one of my missions, along with showing Boston's encroachment into Paradise, one of my missions in the series has been to peel those layers away from Jesse, those protective layers. Well, he had a fiance who was murdered, and now he has an adult son. So now he's a parent, and he can no longer just view the death of a child, anybody's child, as dispassionately or as disconnected as he could in the past. And I think that adds another dimension to Jesse's character and to the series itself.
As he starts to do this, does he get some sense of resentment about Boston? Is this a protective thing for him, or is it something that he decides he just has to to accept because that's the way life is working now?
Well, early on in the book, I kind of set that up in that Jesse sees it both ways. And don't forget, Jesse had once been an L.A. robbery homicide detective. So he knows big city life. And there's parts of big city life like diversity and the vibe and the vitality that he really enjoys that's coming to paradise. On the other hand, he knows the sins of the big city also will force him to deal with things he's never really had to deal with on a large scale before.
When you researched into this whole opioid thing, and the overdose here was heroin and fentanyl, what did you find as far as what makes that so attractive to teenagers? Because I've been on opioids before when I had a broken collarbone and ribs. It's an awful drug to be on, and it must be an awful drug to be addicted to. So what do you find is so attractive to it for teenagers?
Well, that's a strange thing. What do teenagers find attractive about vaping? It's like volunteering to be addicted to something. I'm very lucky in that I'm one of those people who reacts very badly to opioids. But I don't think it's an attractiveness. I think some people just have a physical attraction to it that's beyond their control. And, you know, if the supply is plentiful and everybody who gets hurt or injured or breaks a bone or hurts an ankle gets a prescription for it, there's going to be a percentage of people who get addicted to it. So in the book, my goal is not to say teenagers are bad that they get addicted to it. I just think a lot of people get addicted to it and then they're trapped by their addiction.
I'm chatting with Reed Farrell Coleman about his latest novel, Robert B. Parker's The Bitterest Pill. It's the latest in the Jesse Stone series. It's available now wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Putnam. There's a scene, and I think it was fairly early on in the book, that you mention at the end of Watch, Jesse does this little drive around town and almost puts the town to bed for himself. And that had such a calming feeling for me to read, just to kind of get an idea of into his mindset of what he looks at his role in law enforcement as. And so where does that come from and fit into his personality that he has this, it's almost maybe a 10 or 15 minute, just a moment of silence at the end of his watch where he just kind of looks around. It almost reminds me of the creation story where God looked at everything and saw that it was good. Is that kind of what's going on here?
I couldn't have said it better myself. So take a bow. For me, as a writer, it serves the purpose of catching the readers up to where the town is at the moment and where Jesse is at the moment. So it serves that function to remind readers who, A, have read the last book or the last few books, where we're at in this book and where we have been. And for readers who have never read the series, it's a way to catch them up to where Jesse is and where the town is. So it serves that function. It also serves the function of a ritual, which was very important to Jesse. If you recall, Jesse is an alcoholic, and he used to have all of these rituals that would lead to him drinking by himself. And this used to be the prelude to his drinking ritual. But now that he's a recovering alcoholic, it's just the only ritual he gets to enjoy.
I think as we looked at different art forms dealing with drug addiction and, you know, people hunting down drug suppliers, it seems like you arrest somebody, you ask them, you know, we'll work with you if you kick up and tell us who your supplier is, that type of thing. It isn't that simple for Jesse Stone here, and he comes to find that there's a lot of roadblocks in finding where this supply is, and there's also political ramifications. So as you peeled back the layers, as you say, of this whole supply chain and this goes, were you even surprised at some of the people who really turned their heads to this crisis? Because this opioid crisis seems to be something everybody should be fighting against, but there's particular forces out there, even in administrations, political or otherwise, that don't really want to acknowledge it.
Well, I didn't write the book to be a crusader, but I mean it's an impossible situation to ignore. But like with everything else, when money and power are involved and it's established, it's very hard to get people to turn their backs on that. And it's just a reality is there's so much money to be made from things like this. I mean, drug companies made billions and billions of dollars from addicting, you know, law-abiding citizens on this horrible drug. So, no, I'm not surprised because I'm old and realize how life works.
This had to be a sad tale to write. Did you? Because it was sad for me to read. Did you sense that as you wrote it?
Of course, it's a sad thing. But for me, you know, I can separate myself out from what I'm writing about, because you have to be able to do that. In some ways, I parallel Jesse's attempt at distancing himself from the emotion of things. I have to do that as a writer. It's a difficult thing to do, to modulate between feeling the emotions so you can write them accurately. So I did go through that. And on the flip side, distancing myself enough to be able to keep writing the book.
Well, and also, as far as distancing yourself, you had to put yourself in the mindset of drug dealers in this book. And that had to be a tough task because that's not who you are.
Well, that's one of the great things about being a writer. You know, there's some really good stuff about being a writer, and one of them is you get to play a lot of roles that you don't have to audition for. So it's always fun for me to put myself in other people's shoes, people I would never be, who are doing things I would never do. But I have to make them as realistic as possible. I try not to make the bad guys only bad, although in this book there are some guys who are only bad. But life isn't like that. As writers will always say, even the bad guys are heroes of their own stories. So you have to look at bad guys that way.
When you've got a series like this where the main character is played on television by a famous actor, here in this case it's Tom Selleck, I know it doesn't. The TV stories don't necessarily parallel the books, but does Tom Selleck ever enter your mind as you're thinking about Jesse Stone, or are you completely separate from the TV recreation?
Who's Tom Selleck? it's hard for me to separate. I mean, I'm very fortunate in that I have come to know two of Robert B. Parker's best friends, and as his best friend, a gentleman named Mel Farman, told me that the first time Robert B. Parker ever saw Tom Selleck as Jesse Stone, he wept.
Wow.
Because it's exactly who he pictured as Jesse Stone. So it would be kind of foolish for me not to see Tom Selleck as Jesse. But I don't feel, on the flip side, I don't feel obliged to stick to the stories that Michael Brandman, who wrote three books in this series before me, writes for the TV movies.
All right. Well, this book is just an amazing tale. It's Robert B. Parker's The Bitterest Pill, the latest Jesse Stone novel from Reed Farrell Coleman. The book's available now wherever your books are sold from the good folks at Putnam. Reed, just another fantastic offering, and thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Thanks for having me on. Be well.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time. It's a bitter pill.